fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Stretch it out. Warm up for your day with some exercises for your brain. Hey, don't want to pull a cerebellum. This is Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good morning. 5:32. Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590 The Fan on your Monday, getting you set for a brand new week. Yes, the dream team is back. Move over Patrick Ewing and Hakeem Olajuwon.
Christian Laettner.
It's Greg Brady. It's Andrew Walker. Ryan Favreau. Max Prosek. Yeah. Rachel Clemens back behind the glass.
Yeah.
Oh, what can you do?
Furious 5.
Had enough of that Eric Smith clown. You're back.
What was the problem?
Greg Brady is back. You're tweeting about Tom Petty yesterday and classic LPs. It's good to have you back, kind of.
It was, it felt like a long time away. But that happens two out of three weeks away. Now we're together for, another 3 weeks or so, and then you depart. You have a grand adventure that you're probably feeling safer about going on maybe than you were 2 weeks
ago. Yeah, maybe. Whatever. Maybe. If we get shot down over Russia...
We had a good run.
Yep, exactly. How was your...
Your plane didn't, but you did.
That's true. How was your time off?
Yeah,
took the family to...
A lot of beach action. In fact, an area that got devastated by what looked like a tornado yesterday in Grand Bend, Ontario, we were sort of in and about for a week or so. Now they're like... They might call that like a disaster area. It just got demolished yesterday.
It wasn't just the aftermath of your kids?
It wasn't, yeah. No, there's still sand in the car.
You'll never get that out. Once you get it in, you can never really get it out.
I'm a fan of sand for like 2 days, and then it just becomes nothing but a nuisance. I'm not a huge beach guy. I'm like a 6 out of 10 beach guy. Some people are 9.5 out of 10. And they want to go every year, and they just want to sit there and lather themselves up. I like to do things.
Well, you look very...
I'm a doer.
You look very tan.
Dark.
You look very svelte.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Reasonably so. I finally got back to the gym yesterday. And after a week, there's nothing that sort of substitutes for it. No swimming, no lifting things, packing, unpacking the car. So I was happy to get back and get in there yesterday.
And what a day to come back. So you were off, during this Blue Jays 2-8 road trip where the sky was falling. And your first day back, we're talking about a series win.
Yeah.
Their third straight at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
They lost 17 in a row. Now they might win 17 in a row at Yankee Stadium.
My last show was going into the game against Texas, and it's, oh no, it's Yu Darvish. And it's first game after the break, and
They lost that one.
They lost that one. Then they lost, the season, the opener to the Red Sox. Was that 14-1?
14-1. Season ended that night, according to Mike Wilner.
He's usually not that dour about the Jays' long-term plans.
Being sarcastic.
And then they won the next three, and they've won 5 of 6 since then. So they are they haven't hurt themselves, right? 7-3, and Baltimore did this trip from hell. And
well, they needed it, right? They needed that 7-3.
Yeah, but they needed it. Would have helped if Baltimore was a little bit worse, because 5-5 might have been the most optimistic forecast when you go out and play Seattle, the Angels, and the A's for 10 straight games. And now Baltimore's going to get, some home cooking started soon. Although it is the Angels still. That's nice that the Angels come to play Baltimore for a series of three while Toronto's in Boston.
The only saving grace, so Baltimore does take 2 of 3 from Seattle, but the only saving grace there is that it is the Mariners. And we went into the weekend thinking, boy, we might learn a lot about this playoff chase this weekend, because you had Boston and Tampa. And if someone was going to sweep there or take 2 of 3, I mean, that basically buries the other. And I think we're in a position, and now they deal Jake Peavy. The Red Sox are pretty much toast, whereas Tampa keeps winning even though they lose yesterday.
Yeah, and Seattle's hit that bit of a skid there, right? The Mets went in and took 2 of 3, which just shouldn't happen.
Yeah, and Seattle's leading. They were leading that wild card in between Felix Hernandez and Iwakuma and Robinson Cano. It looks like they're the club to beat. But they can't hit right now, right? You think that in Jays land, any problem this team has is above and beyond what anybody else has. But if you're in Seattle right now, there's no offense.
It's probably not the same as Jose Bautista doing it, but imagine if Chris Davis. So imagine if Chris Davis is Jose Bautista this year. Or back that up, Jose Bautista is Chris Davis. And he got a hitting 199 with 17 home runs after an unbelievable season, which, you know, he really could have walked in and named his price to the Baltimore Orioles to keep him long term for a 26-year-old guy the year he had last year. And he cannot, he's had, you know, three homers in the last month. He can't get on base any other way. He's a real problem for the Orioles right now in terms of being, what they've got in Nelson Cruz, they don't have in Chris Davis.
And for the first time, you look at the schedule, and I think right now, more than ever before, with John Lester rumors swirling and the Red Sox lose 2 of 3 down in Tampa, I don't know if the Jays have ever gone into Fenway Park at a more opportune time to take advantage than this week. Starting tonight, Game 1, R.A. Dickey against Clay Buchholz. Lots more to come on that. James Reimer, RBC Canadian Open, 537, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Everything you're talking about, they're talking about. Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good morning, 542, Brady and Walker. Now and then, coming up in 7-8 minutes from
now and then.
Our producer, Ryan Favreau.
I've missed him doing it also.
Yeah, that is.
You've been exciting third voice in there.
Well, he was on paternity leave for quite some time. And then when he made his return, you were out. And over the last, it's good to have you back. Greg Brady is back. I'm
Great
Andrew Walker. He's Greg Brady. And I mean, we had Eric Smith, who, you know,
God,
to talk about Paul Millsap and Rafer Allison, you know, for so long. When
Rafa Arujo.
Skipped
my
loop.
Did you guys do any mock drafts from the mid-90s? I always like those. Those are good talk segments.
It was good to have him in for his... His Kevin Love, Andrew Wiggins type of analysis.
Yeah.
I was just grilling him.
Now, did he sit here? Because there were like 3 phone books on the chair here, and I just moved them. Dude, yeah. Does anybody need them? I don't know. Nobody gets phone books anymore to the house, so I don't know what to do with them. One's from Scarborough.
He was there, and he was wearing shorts, so his bare legs
I saw that, and I thought, was that a Ping Pong Friday representation fashion-wise?
No, that was all week. He was consistent.
Jeez, he's been here. He's been here a long, long time, and
but that's the key,
right?
He
doesn't know the slacks rule.
He has been here a long time,
yeah.
And that's why he can wear shorts to work. I guess.
I don't know if that's it or not. Bob McCown can dress like a sea captain, and Eric's an older sea captain, and Eric Smith can wear shorts.
I had dinner with
the rules.
Well, you know, I had dinner with Matthew Barnaby last night. Our buddy's in town doing the Sportsnet to poker event, and he was telling stories about. You know, Jaromir Jagr would just kind of say, I'm not going to practice today. I was out last night, and I'm tired, and I'm not going to go. And they would call it a maintenance day. It's the same with Eric Smith.
Is that right?
Yeah.
He's got that kind
shorts,
of...
shorts, whatever.
Got that kind of privilege. Well, I saw him tweet, he's going to Montreal with his family in the car.
Oh, can you imagine?
I think he's just got
driving
the one child
way.
Now, right? He's not had a second. And that can change your dynamic.
I didn't bother getting to know him over the last week.
That's a good idea. Once you got the man advantage in the car, once you lose that man advantage, it's trouble. Once you're 2-on-4. By the way, I do think I want to get a minivan. I don't even need one, but
I want a minivan.
I want room and space.
Nobody wants to get a minivan. Get an SUV where the seats fold down.
Yeah, you go through one side. I want the 2 kids in bucket seats so they're not sitting right next to each other.
What? I will sell you my Ford Escape. I need to sell it, and we can come to... I'll give you a good deal.
I know you will. Yeah. And I'll throw in your golf clubs.
Oh, yeah.
Still,
and my sandals. You have those, too.
Oh, I sold those at a garage sale last week.
Oh.
I got something for them though. You'll be able to get brand new sandals to a great extent.
Speaking of golf, RBC Canadian Open. I'll tell you what. After round 2 on Friday, it really looked like Graham DeLitt was going to take a run at this thing, and then a couple of reasons why he didn't. Number one, Jim Furyk on Saturday just lit it up, and it looked like that deficit was too much. And Graham DeLitt kind of lost touch with the tournament a little bit. I thought, anyway, on that bogey on 18 on Saturday, which was that big swing, it left him, I think it was like 6 back heading into Sunday, which was just going to be too much of a deficit. And as it turns out, South African Tim Clark comes all the way from behind to win the Canadian Open.
Yeah, you don't see too many guys. So Clark, 67, 67, 64, 65. You don't see too many guys shoot the round that they shot and go 11 under par on the weekend, no less, and not factor in somewhere. And Furyk's almost, I wonder if he feels almost a little hard done by that he let this, he's a pro's pro. And then whether he feels like Clark went and got it by shooting 65, he still shot 69 on the last day.
Yeah.
But finished a shot behind after just being nothing but consistent throughout. Yeah, I mean, no rounds of 70 either.
I was guilty of, so I was watching it yesterday and I was watching Furyk and I was watching Dillette. And I was guilty of not watching really or paying attention to anybody in the middle. So Dillette loses touch with it. He finished in seventh, seven shots back. And the dust settles. And all of a sudden, Tim Clark is your winner. Where I just thought the whole time it was going to be Jim Furyk. Because he was so methodical all week. And yesterday did that classic Sunday, I have a 3-4 shot lead of just hitting the middle of the greens and, you know, lagging for par and... He was just going to get out with the title, and he ends up not getting it done.
I know this tournament's taken, I know what it was 20, 25 years ago, and all the stars played, and it wasn't back-to-back on a weekend after. It's been after the British Open, I think, for the last 5 or 6 years, the week after. And, you know, for especially the European golfers, they just don't do it. They stay over there and probably play a couple tournaments until the PGA. Yeah.
And you can't even blame them.
Can't blame them. But the field, you know, when I run it down, I didn't see any of it, almost literally. But that said, the field's better than I remember it being the last few years. Ernie Els has been consistently coming here, and he won a few years ago. You did get Graham McDowell over. Ben Curtis has won a major. There's Retief Goosen. Robert Allenby's here.
No one cares about those guys. Robert Allenby and Ben Curtis.
I'm an average to slightly below in terms of the golf I watch.
You're an average golf watcher, and Ben Curtis is moving the needle for you?
But I know I know he won the British Open. If Stuart Sink's there, I know him. If Jeff Ogilvie's there, I know him. I'm saying if I went as a spectator, who am I going to... Vijay Singh's there. If I'm there with my dad would say, let's go watch Vijay Singh for a few holes. I know he would.
And he's not saying, let's go watch Robert Allenby. There's two tiers of guys. There's the big six that really move the needle. Okay. And that is the Rory, Phil, Tiger grouping. Bubba's in there.
Is Bubba in there?
Yes. In terms of ticket sales and galleries, and we got to go watch him hit his drive. There's six of those, and none of those guys were there. None of them.
Yeah.
And then there is tier two, the Furyks, the Matt Kuchars. You know, Ricky Fowler is kind of in between. Now, there was a few of the tier two guys. There was. Between Furyk and Ernie Els, and in this case, Graeme Dillette makes that list in terms of Canadians.
Yeah.
But it was a very pedestrian.
Why do
field.
I think Luke Donald's as popular as Jim Furyk? And yeah, I know he's not won a major, but and he missed the cut, so that didn't help the weekend.
I mean,
why do I think Luke Donald is?
I'd put Luke Donald in that tier two. Certainly, right. A year and a half ago, Luke Donald has kind of disappeared a little bit. But yeah, Graeme McDowell is in that mix. Robert Allenby is not.
All right, I'm getting the signal. That's enough Canadian Open. RBC Canadian Open talk. Boring our host for now and then.
Ah, yeah, okay. Well, Ryan Faber's in. Let's do it.
Now and then, a hopefully but potentially not entertaining look back at some of the great and not so great moments in this day's history.
I'll be back in time. Also, sorry to Ryan Faber. Your favorite golfer, Y.E. Yang, missed the cut. I know you're a big Y.E. Yang fan.
You went head to head with Tiger.
You want him to win the Masters so Jim Nance can work Y.E. Yang into some kind of a pun.
Hey, Wang, what's with the pictures?
No, I said Yang.
Come on,
I really did say Yang this one time. I said Yang.
Hey, Wang.
Not Yang Chung.
Yeah.
Yang.
Well, let's go rush over and watch Luke Donald tee off.
Telling you how lifelong golf fan thinks.
Mr. Brady, Robert Allenby's on hole 7. Let's go.
Bad news for you both. They're both really boring. Like, really boring.
Not as exciting as Man City scoring 5 goals in Pittsburgh yesterday. I'm going to watch all of them back-to-back.
Shut up.
Show.
And I've watched both Man United games preseason on, like, weird feeds. Anyway, July 28th, stuff that happened on this date. Stop wasting my time, fellas. Because 1896 on this date, the city of Miami is incorporated. Have you been to Miami?
Yes, of course.
Have you partied hard on South Beach?
Yeah, that happened.
With me?
Yeah.
You know what? More so before I covered a Lions game in 2002 there. So yeah, I'd say I did party there before children, before a
couple of virgin daiquiris.
Before I became, just cut out the daiquiris. That's if. And I was one
of
them.
Such a liar.
Oh, my God.
No, I can't say. Now, if someone said, we're transferring you to Miami for a year, you'd get excited, though. You wouldn't be depressed. We're not sending you to Milwaukee for a year. You can't like Brewers baseball that much.
No.
Nobody can.
But do you have to, like, would I have to cover the Dolphins?
I don't know what you'd do. You'd have to, you'd produce the best show at WQAM.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
I would do that, actually.
Work on Dan Levitard.
Work on the resume after the show. 1973, on this date, 600,000 people turn up at Summer Jam at Watkins Glen for a concert. That's a lot of people. It's the biggest concert you've been to, Walker.
Great question.
Some Brad Paisley show out Stampede Week or something.
The one Riley Cooper was at last year?
I'm trying to think. You know, I don't even know if I've been to a really big, like, outdoor
like
festival.
Like a stadium show?
Yeah, so everything has been, like, I don't know, Commonwealth Stadium in Edmonton for, like,
Alan Jackson.
ACDC or something.
Probably the Eagles at I was seeing one show at the old Exhibition Stadium. You remember when they'd open the whole stadium?
Yeah.
For the Eagles reunion tour.
But I imagine that Lilith Fair was pretty well attended.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, really? Shocker.
It was not by men.
Just you.
Just me. I had ulterior motives.
There you go.
See, what was better attended? The third one you went to or the first one?
No, people had lost interest. Sarah McLachlan was just turning. The cat commercial in the cages hadn't even come out yet. And already she's making people sad.
Up next.
Stop depressing us.
Amanda Marshall coming up in 5 minutes. Almost.
Right.
In 1994 on this date.
Jewel.
Oh, my God. Baseball players decide to strike. God, the Expos would have won the World Series that year. Haven't you heard that before?
That's a good take.
Expos Yankees.
Original. And the Jays were still defending champions. They wouldn't have gotten themselves back into the hunt, I wouldn't think. No. Maybe they would have dumped a bunch of guys at trade. They didn't get a trade deadline to sort of sell some assets.
That's true.
Maybe they could have got younger then.
Still paying the price.
That's right.
Yes.
All right. Birthday time. Paying the price. Garth Snow. His birthday pays price on in bad trades.
No, I think Walker and I like the Islanders more than the average hockey fan
you do.
Does. Don't we? I think they'll be good this maybe they finally got the goaltending hole plugged with Halak.
They do. Yeah.
Is this on tape from last year? Oh, the Islanders up and coming.
I picked them to make the playoffs 2 years ago and I was right.
That's true.
I'll say Garth is Garth Snow is 44.
48.
Walker closer with 45 today.
Well, I know hockey.
Elizabeth Berkley of Saved by the Bell fame, and then later Showgirls.
Showgirls, right.
And played a prostitute in the Al Pacino football movie.
Kind of went the other way on that one.
Yeah. How old, Brady?
Elizabeth Berkley is a spry 46 today.
That seems to say 48.
42, come on.
What if she'd gone on 90210 and Tiffany Amber Thiessen was in Showgirls? Would more people have gone to see Showgirls? There was just everybody was naked. Doing it in that movie.
Yeah.
And dancing.
Good casting decisions made back. Well.
Did we want to see Elizabeth Berkley naked? Yeah. I'm not.
I think.
I'm not 100%.
Yes.
She's kind of tall.
Yes. Yeah. Answer's yes.
Gawky. All right. Fine.
Number one song, 1981.
Walks like a horse.
I don't know if she does. Does she? The number one song from 1981, Jesse's Girl by Rick Springfield.
Can't beat that.
Yep.
You want to.
You could.
You want to. I'll lay it out there. I had a Rick Springfield poster.
Of course you did.
Nine.
It's Brady and Walker. 555. Works with the 590 of the fan.
There we go. I gotta confess.
You know, I feel so dirty when they start talking cute. I wanna tell her that I love her, but the point is probably...
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey. Join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The fan club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. The Jays win their third straight series.
Tatis will lead a second. The 1-2 pitch. Hit on line into right center field. Dropping. That's a base hit. Bautista scores. And the honor is given the Blue Jays a 5-4 lead here in the Bronx in the ninth inning.
You're listening to Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Good morning, 6:02 on your Mondays. We get another work week started. It is Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Andrew Walker. Very excited to have Greg Brady back in the other chair.
That makes two of us, Andrew.
Yeah, we'll be around for a few weeks until I finally get a day off. But you get tons of holidays, so
You might as well take him. It's
my heavens.
It's a very cushy contract.
I think I'm back for two more weeks and then off for a week. But I saw the NHL sign coming in 72 days.
Yes.
Until puck drop. I felt like I was 90 yep. something in one of the last days I was here, which just isn't true.
PK Subban was here in the complex.
You're kidding. He's never here.
on day 76, though, I wonder if that was on purpose.
Oh, was it?
So we'll see.
Was it maybe?
We'll see if Mario shows up in about 6 days from now.
He's very reclusive.
But since you've been away, I mean, the Blue Jays went limping into the Major League Baseball All-Star break, and then they get back, and just like that. And I know Texas and Boston and even New York aren't what they were a year or 2 years ago. But to go 7-3 since the All-Star break has really given some life to this team and their playoff
Well,
hopes.
Yeah, you'd say wins are wins no matter what at this point. They're 106 games in. There's 56 games left. And whether you think the Yankees, you know, I think the Yankees and have all year are less playoff relevant maybe than the average person, maybe than you a little bit. But it's important to, you have to win those games, and especially the way the series started. They're coming in off winning 3 of 4 at home against Boston, winning 2 of 3. So they've won 2 series in a row. And they get up early, and they give Mark Burley a nice padding Friday night. But they lose the game, and Burley's gone, what was it, his earliest departure in 4 years yeah. or something like that.
Three innings. And it's the one team, New York is the one team he's never been able to figure out in his career.
Lucky they didn't play the 05 White Sox, didn't play the Yankees in the playoffs going to the World Series. Either way, the series and the weekend doesn't start well. So the jinx continues. The curse continues, whatever. And they really did scrap things out Saturday and Sunday. They didn't, you know, they didn't even do what they did against Boston and get out to a lead and ride away into the sunset with it. They had to fight for every at-bat and fight for every run. And even yesterday, you know, they needed about 4 plays, 2 of which might have been kind of fluky, 1 of which the Yankees sort of gifted, and that's the throwaway with Colby Rasmus on base. And they needed by Betances, and they needed those plays to squeeze out a win, but they got the win, and that was the vital thing.
Yeah, that game yesterday, and it was a pretty well-played game from both sides. As I mean, maybe the Jays deserved better earlier. They had Dan Johnson thrown out at the plate. Munenori Kawasaki has a runners in scoring position, base hit with 2 outs, and the Jays failed to capitalize on that. They had runners on base all day long, but it was as up and down, as well-played of a game as we've seen in a long time. And in terms of quality win, like you saw the emotion from Deonna Navarro. He drives in Jose Bautista in the ninth. And this is an overused term, but that was as playoff feel type of a game with 50 games to go as you'll ever see.
Yeah, yeah. And the Yankees, some mental errors. The huge lead David Robertson gave Jose Bautista. He got a running start basically when Robertson was in the stretch before he'd even started moving towards home plate. And an easy steal of second base by Bautista. And that may have ended up winning them the game.
Yeah.
And the
same, it absolutely did.
The same thing with the Rasmus throwing error. Because Kawasaki hits a light fly ball to left field. Rasmus isn't going to be able to tag up on that. So he scores the run, though, on that play, as opposed to being one out, one guy at first base. So they did the little things, and it'd been a while. But during the All-Star break, there were no little things happening that looked good, that looked relevant. And now, you know, can they really make something of this now? Boston for a few games this week at Fenway Park, and then they go to Houston, who hasn't been able to beat much of anybody all season long, let alone the last 5 games. They're losers of 5 straight and closer now to the worst record in the AL. So all in all, and Seattle's come back to earth. So all in all, the Jays are right where they want to be. If you'd laid this out, Andrew, on a platter, right when the All-Star break hits, we talked about just even taking a 500 record. Well, they're 7-3 post All-Star break, and though Baltimore did better on their trip, 5-5, playing all the tough teams from the AL West than you'd have liked to have seen, and the gap is still 3 games. You're happy where you are, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I said coming out of the All-Star break with this homestand and then going to New York, the whole idea was keep your head above water. Just wait for the reinforcements to come in Edwin and Brett Laurie and Adam Lind and even Nolan Reimold, who I think in his brief stint with the Blue Jays was a pretty quality right-handed bat that they could bring in off the bench or platoon or whatever. And they've done one better than that. right? Whereas I think you should be happy with 5-5 in this stretch. They went 7-3. You missed a week, and in fact, two of the last three. So it's interesting to get a fresh perspective. But Aaron Sanchez, his second major league appearance yesterday, goes two innings, gives up one run, and picks up his first major league win. And then the streak continues for Marcus Stroman. So Stroman and Sanchez, these two guys that seemingly everybody want traded a few months ago to bring in some sort of crappy bench help or whatever they were going to do. Your thoughts on these guys now and where Anthopoulos is just a couple of weeks before, a week before the trade deadline.
Quickly, I don't think much had changed on Stroman for me before the break. I thought he'd come to the point where he was a better asset for this team almost than Drew Hutchison. We've seen a few really nice Drew Hutchison wins, and we've talked about the win in Texas against Darvish and the win in Detroit to open that series up way back when. But Stroman may be the better commodity long term. You can get lost in this sometimes. They're the same age, and Stroman has just taken a little longer to get to the big leagues, i.e., they didn't rush him. So Hutchison's stock's kind of slipping a little bit, and maybe he's running into some inning trouble too. Stroman's not, and I didn't anticipate Sanchez being called up last week, making the two relief appearances, and I could even tell just from glancing at my Twitter feed how amazing it must have looked. I didn't see one pitch thrown, but how amazing it must have looked him coming in and two important innings in a very big game that could have swung the Boston series the other way. That was the night before the Stroman performance, and Sanchez had to be good because it would have been two straight losses, and then you're looking at a rickety ending to that series.
Yeah, very much so. And it's one of those things that it's tough to quantify, but you see a pitcher come in, and so many pitchers look the same, but Sanchez takes that mound, and he's throwing 99 with a crazy hook, and for the first time, I think a lot of casual Jays fans realized this guy has something. We'll see what it is, but he certainly has something.
And quickly, I know the Jays fans want something, and I still feel like something is coming, but it may not be the guys in Tampa. Tampa's right back in this race compared to where they were a week ago. Jake Peavy goes to San Francisco. I'm not sure that was a solution to anything. Sanchez can't take anybody's spot in the starting rotation right now. Who is Jake Peavy going to? Jake Peavy's not pitching as well as Jay Happ. So what are you going to use Jake Peavy for if you trade for him?
10 after 6, it is Brady and Walker. Coverage begins at 7 tonight. Blue Jays, Red Sox at Fenway. It is R.A. Dickey against Clay Buchholz. Marcus Stroman will go tomorrow and also will join us in the show tomorrow on Brady and Walker. Let's get you what you need to know on your Monday.
This is your Monday morning six-pack. Six things you need to start your day.
All right, number 6, speaking of the Blue Jays, we're still waiting on these reinforcements, but outfielder Nolan Reimold was activated from the 15-day disabled list by the Blue Jays yesterday. The Jays' DFA, Esmiel Rogers, he goes to AAA Buffalo to make space. He did not get in to see any action in his latest recall. Reimold was available to pinch hit yesterday, but the Blue Jays did not have to use him. I actually thought out of all these waiver claims, and I know some would say it's too many. You're too many little tinkers from Alex Anthopoulos. I actually thought the Reimold was maybe a pretty decent move.
And started out looking that way, too. I mean, he'll start every game against lefty starters. You've got to get some of these bats out who are left-handed bats who don't seem too strong against left-handed pitching. So Reimold, ideally, when they play against John Lester on Wednesday, Nolan Reimold will be in the starting lineup.
Number 5, buy your jerseys. LeBron James is returning to the number 23 he wore in his first go-round with the Cleveland Cavaliers. He tweeted that he would wear 23 again after heading back to the Cavs from Miami, where he wore number 6. And I know already there's a lot of counterfeit websites, if you want to say, they were knee-deep in the number 32 LeBron Cavaliers jerseys.
So. There's a lot of talk, too, that they missed out in not retiring number 23. No one can wear 99 in the NHL, and that's one thing. But lots of regular dudes. Marcus Camby was wearing 23 for Portland 2 years ago. Maybe 23, once it's done with Michael and once it's done with LeBron, maybe you take it out of circulation and nobody wears it anymore.
I can see it. Number 4, Brian Scott. Not to be confused with Byron Scott, who is the new head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, won 3 NBA titles as a shooting guard for those Lakers. not officially announced, but he will replace Mike D'Antoni, who resigned April the 30th.
It's going to be a long run for the Lakers, I think, of not being very good, not being very relevant. Still, you know, the loss of Pau Gasol. We don't know how healthy Kobe Bryant's going to be. Still no word on Steve Nash. There was still a lot of talk in the spring. And when he did that little TV thing on ESPN, they might be amnestying his contract, but they haven't announced it as of yet. I think the Lakers are going to be bad for quite a long time, so it's a lot of losing Byron Scott's going to have to get used to.
Number three, the New York Rangers agree to terms in a five-year deal with RFA forward Derek Brassard. It's 5 years worth $5 million per. Pretty classic example of a restricted free agent versus an unrestricted free agent, because Derek Brassard would probably be one of those guys that gets, you know, Paul Stastny type of money, maybe when it's not deserved.
27 years old. Is this about who he is? A 45-point season. Had obviously a very good playoff. Had two good playoffs, really, in a row for the New York Rangers. That's about, I mean, he's probably peaked in terms of what he's going to produce.
He's a second-line center, right? And
yeah.
And that's really, I guess, going right. And in this sense, the Rangers don't let him get the UFA status. Number two, RBC Canadian Open. Jim Furyk looked like he had this one right in the bag as he was leading it basically wire to wire until Tim Clark, the South African, a 5-under-65 yesterday to overtake Furyk and win the Canadian Open. Furyk finishes one back in second. Top Canadian was Graham Dillette, who is in contention after a blistering round on Friday but could never really get over that hump and finishes seven back in seventh spot.
Amazing. Five birdies and the four pars for Clark on the back nine. Shot a 30 and was 35 going in with just the one birdie and one bogey. He was even par through nine. So you're right. He really didn't put it together until his back nine.
And the number one thing you need to know, the Blue Jays end that streak at Yankee Stadium, and they do one better. They take 2-3 from the Yankees, a back-and-forth seesaw 5-4 win over New York. Aaron Sanchez, his first big league win in relief. Casey Jansen picks up the save.
Attention.
So the Jays sitting in that wild card lead, that second spot. They lead it by a game and a half on Seattle in a game on the New York Yankees, still three back of Baltimore. Tonight, it is game one against the Boston Red Sox. Coverage begins at 7. R.A. Dickey against Clay Buchholz, who the Jays managed to rough up about a week ago.
Yeah, and nobody got good over the weekend either, really. Nobody, you know, Tampa had a chance to sweep the Boston Red Sox and get within 3.5 of the wild card. They didn't do it. Cleveland and Kansas City split a bunch of games. Seattle's lost 8 of their last 11. So the Jays sit right now a game ahead of New York, a game and a half out of Seattle, 2 games ahead of Kansas City for that wild card.
Always the best sports talk on Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
You're sampling the best.
I'm honored to go into the Baseball Hall of Fame with such a great group of men, Frank Thomas, Joe Torre, Tony La Russa, and of course, my longtime teammate and manager, Greg Maddux and Bobby Cox.
That is a former hockey player turned baseball player, Tom Glavine, going to the Baseball Hall of Fame yesterday. It is Brady and Walker on your Monday. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Greg Brady. He is back after his 9 weeks vacation. It was Hall of Fame Sunday yesterday at Cooperstown. A lot of Braves going in.
A lot of Braves. That's Tom Glavine. Is there anybody who doesn't know that he was a draft pick of the LA Kings?
I think it's pretty widely known by now. Yeah.
But that said, I'm trying to think of another guy who's been a NHL draft pick to play in Major League. But you'll never see that again. A guy to switch around. We've had our two-sport guys like Bo Jackson, Danny Ainge.
Yeah, it's not so much hockey in
those
sports.
Deion Sanders.
Although Nigel Morgan played for the Regina Pats for a little bit.
I did not know that. I did not know that. What position?
He was a dump and chase forward.
Just a guy.
Kind of guy. Yep. Bottom six.
Wow.
Isn't that bizarre?
It's totally and utterly
He
bizarre.
Played like 6 games 1 year for the Drona Pats in like the early 90s.
He picked the right sport then.
Yes.
Yesterday this huge class goes in. Three pretty legendary managers. So it's Joe Torre, former Blue Jay Bobby Cox, who's probably got more Blue Jay ties than Francis Thomas, but either way, Frank Thomas era is sort of a little cloudy one for the Blue Jays, given they outright released him, and he didn't retire after that. Smoltz maybe next. There's a big class coming in next time around. Randy Johnson, Pedro, John Smoltz waiting to get in. It's Craig Biggio, who just missed. But Tony La Russa said something yesterday. They asked him, basically, about the steroid era, because he managed Mark McGwire, and he managed Jose Canseco, and both now are admitted longtime drug users. We're not even talking about the Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and other guys that we think we know used that are very much up in the air. And he told ESPN over the weekend that they should have maybe a separate wing in Cooperstown, that he hopes someday the poster boys of the steroid era will join him in Cooperstown, but with an asterisk. His quote, "It's my two cents, but I think you should let them in. You can't place these guys ahead of Hank Aaron, Babe Ruth. It was a bad period, but if a player has Hall of Fame credentials, I think they should be allowed in. A lot of them had Hall of Fame credentials before all this stuff came out." This is the oldest argument in the book, the oldest sports topic in the book, Andrew, but when La Russa says it, he has to say something about it one way or the other.
And yeah.
He's not going to poo-poo. He's not there, potentially, without the talents, if you will, of McGuire and Canseco.
And Canseco, yeah. And I think he's on point. I think most people probably agree with him. And I go to the average fan, right? Because it's one thing for somebody in the media to write some scathing, holier-than-thou article or opinion piece on guys that aren't in the hall. But let's all be honest with each other. Does anybody out there think that a guy like Barry Bonds or a guy like Mark McGuire or a guy like Rafael Palmeiro doesn't deserve to be enshrined famously or infamously in the Baseball Hall of Fame? Of course they do. And I don't know anybody that is passionately the other way on it.
Yeah, I'd throw Sammy Sosa into there.
Sure, of course.
609 home runs, who got 7% on the ballot last
time. Yeah, Jose Canseco, put him there too. Roger Clemens.
Yeah, there's going to be no doubt going to be a firestorm about some of the comments by La Russa. Here's the other thing also. Now, this is what I think is going to, where I think he's going to really land on the wrong side of the argument here. He told the New York Daily News, he voiced suspicions about possible steroid use by some of his players, the higher-ups in Oakland, including ownership, and then GM Sandy Alderson, who's now the GM of the Mets. But he encountered indifference. His quote, "I knew our programs in Oakland were 100% clean, but I went to Sandy, but we had our suspicions, guys hitting stronger but not working out. I went to Sandy and ownership about this, and they told me flat off, right of privacy, it's a collective bargaining issue." Sandy Alderson's comment, "I'm not going to comment on that until at least Monday," meaning not going to wreck Tony La Russa's day, but I'm not so sure Tony La Russa, winning championships with these guys, was banging on the door going, "Hey, we got to do something. These guys might be injecting themselves in the bathroom and making themselves..." I doubt it strongly.
Well, put yourself in Alderson's shoes, though. Right? I mean, is indifference, is there really, and in that era, any other way to feel about it? What would you do? Of course you'd be indifferent.
No, but I'm doubting strongly I'm doubting the GM would do anything, but I'm also doubting the manager. This may be the part where he doesn't need to say it, where the manager is this moral crusader, is like, "Got to get drugs out of the sport, but my GM and owner won't help me." I'm not sure we're thinking Tony La Russa was being that vehement about it.
And the whole Hall of Fame discussion, too. I mean, I guess it's chicken and egg, but all these guys are legends. The Sosas, the Maguires, the Consecos, they're legends. So were they legends first and then the steroids, or vice versa? I would say that it was unfortunate they did steroids, because all these guys are Hall of Famers anyway.
And Bonds and Clemens are also.
I mean, name one guy that the only reason he has Hall of Fame credentials is because of steroids. It's really tough to do.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd have to keep having these guys like the Brady Anderson years and the Luis Gonzalez years would have to add up into a Hall of Fame career, and right now they don't. We'll see where it goes. They actually over the weekend decided they'd also shift the waiting period to 10 years instead of 12. And that's going to hurt players like Clemens and Bonds. It's going to hurt other guys like Tim Raines, who's sitting out there under 50%. Not that I'm implicating him in the steroid issue, but he was an illicit drug user as well, and that hasn't sat well with some voters for rightly or wrongly.
6:30, Brady and Walker. Coming up at 8:30 this morning, Sportsnet is sponsoring an event at the Rogers Cup, which is upcoming, called the Sportsnet Ball Hockey Challenge. It'll feature ATP players against NHL stars, including Jason Spezza, who will join us later on this morning at 8:40. We have three sets of tickets to give away to you coming up at 8:30 this morning. And what we'll do is give you some names. You're going to have to call in and tell us, are we naming a former ATP tennis player, a Swedish pop artist, or an obscure NHL Swede? You have basically a 1 in 3 chance. And I'll be honest, you had a bunch of names written down. I don't know if I could ace this contest.
There's a lot of Johansons and Larsons. Just know your Johansons and Larsons for
this is Swedish
this
folk music, by the way.
I thought it was something right out of Lord of the Rings in the middle part.
Yes.
Three hours and 28 minutes. Yeah. The Chronicles of Narnia, exactly. We saw this story. Cursive writing. People, you know, there's writing and there's printing. And the Toronto Catholic School Board is going to bring cursive writing back. And I'm not even sure. I couldn't even find in the story when they got rid of it. But isn't that part of growing up is learning how to write?
Handwriting, yeah.
And they don't do it as much in school anymore. And they think, look, we'll be more efficient. You know, we had to write our exams in college at university. You know, you're scrambling because I'd be worried about two things during an exam. Not that I didn't know my stuff, but is my handwriting legible? I was a bit of a sloppy chicken scratch writer.
You're not a doctor.
Yeah, not quite that bad. But this is really intriguing in that they're finding kids don't even, like, they can't sign for, like, a bank card when they're 15, 16 years old. They've never written cursively, and parents have had to do this at home, but they're starting to do this now. Did you know they started using cursive writing centuries ago because they wanted to save ink? And this way the pen never leaves the page.
Yeah.
I never would have guessed that.
I don't know where I stand on this. I think that kids absolutely don't need it because computers exist, for sure.
Yeah.
But I also think that there's some life skills that you should learn for the sake of learning. Our next generation is dumb enough as it is.
Yeah.
So why not?
We're more worried. We're as worried about them putting, you know, proper sentence structure together.
I mean,
spelling words correctly.
If I leave you a note, a handwritten note, you know, on your water bottle or something that says, "Hey, I stuck this in the toilet, Greg." I print it out like in printing letters.
Yeah.
I don't handwrite.
Yeah, I don't know who's going to handwrite anymore. But that said, it is a skill. I kind of found it fun to learn in skill. I'd rather have done that than paper mache or draw the diagram of the female reproductive system. I didn't like health class very much.
You remember the scene with Adam Sandler and Billy Madison, where he doesn't know how to write, so it's he can't write a Z.
No, yeah, I do remember that scene. But the whole connecting the letters thing can be a little bit overrated.
I'm kind of doodling right now. I don't know if I could go through the alphabet.
I do it so little now, it hurts my hand also. Like, when I have to really scrawl out something long term, I find, like, my hand starts to hurt. Like, I'm out of practice.
Like, how do you do a B? I don't know how to do a B in cursive writing.
No, I could, a big B, I could describe it. A capital B.
I don't know if I could. I don't know if I could write cursively if I had to.
Yeah, but you sign a check like you don't even.
I can curse. I can sign.
You don't even give it a second thought.
I can sign my name. That's not cursive writing. It's a signature.
That doesn't use all 26 letters.
634.
What's a cursive X?
Brady and Walker.
Where do you start the pen, top or the bottom?
More defunct school topics coming up. 6:42, Ian Leggett will join us. Did Jim Furyk blow it yesterday at the RBC Canadian Open? And how did Greg Brady's favorite golfer, the guy who moves the needle, Robert Allenby, play yesterday?
Not sure.
Cooler than math club and almost as cool as chess club. The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. Keep it here for more Brady and Walker, only on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Don't you look back on a big lost
world. Don't you look down like a hero. 6:42, good morning. It is Brady and Walker. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Greg Brady. Yes, that Greg Brady
that
is
me.
In the house. How many weeks of vacation do you get?
Good grief.
Four. Ian Leggett is like a part-timer at Sportsnet, and he doesn't get as many vacation days as you do.
He has to work every Saturday morning at 7 a.m.
They might tape that.
No, usually that's... No, there's relevant tournament results. It's cut-down day the day before at majors.
So before we get to Ian Leggett, let me ask you. Okay, so the RBC Canadian Open, which was yesterday, it wrapped up. And admittedly, yes, the field is not, I mean, out of all the guys that move the needle, right? The guys that can push ticket sales just by their mere presence. And I'm talking Rory, Bubba,
Tiger, Phil obviously is in there. Adam Scott is in there. And believe it or not, but Fred Couples somehow is still in there. And he plays most of his time now on the Champions Tour. But he is still part of that mix. And I think Ricky Fowler is getting there as well. None of those guys were there. They had some secondary guys like the Snedekers and the Ernie Els and the Matt Kuchers. How did this influence your watching, and how much did you watch yesterday?
Okay, so I'm away Thursday, Friday. I'm not near a television. I don't get near a television
okay,
until
well,
Friday
yeah,
at 10
so you kind of don't count, but...
No, I'd count less on this particular weekend, but it's also, I look at the field, and I admit, yeah, not having watched much, just getting reassimilated. And that said, there's more big names than I thought. And there's some names that seem to always like doing it. Els always likes to play here. Singh always comes here. And whether you know it or not, I think more people, gosh, I feel like the older golf fan is more inclined to go, especially if he's there, is going to more inclined to follow Vijay Singh around for a hole or two than he is Robert Allenby, than he is Matt Kuchar to some extent, because
yeah.
He's more well-known.
We'll ask Ian Leggett this. Ian Leggett joins us right now on Brady and Walker from Sportsnet. Is it about the quality of the field, Ian, or is it the fact that some of the bigger names that were at this tournament all managed to play pretty well?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I think, you know, Matt Kuchar, you've got to almost put him into that sort of A-minus category, and as well as Graham McDowell.
Yeah, there was a lot of A-minus guys.
Got Dustin Johnson, who's kind of, you know, slightly above an A-minus scale on the PGA Tour. But it's all about the schedule. It's about the timing of this event. You know, I know that players on the PGA Tour pick their schedule around, you know, majors, and especially coming off of British. Now, the best players in the world have exhausted themselves not only during the British and the travel, but the preparation that leads up before it. So I think that, you know, until the Canadian Open can get out of this time slot the week after the British, then, you know, they're kind of going to be stuck with this type of field every single year.
Is the fall ever a possibility? I know they've flirted with that before, Ian, the idea of having it after major season's over, and especially in a Ryder Cup year, that's also really difficult to do as well, isn't it? To have it after Labor Day, yet before the weather's too bad to have it.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, there has been discussion about moving it to a FedEx Cup event, but the problem is, and then it becomes an RBC Open.
Yeah.
You can't have a Canadian Open. I mean, there's the potential there. Obviously, this year, Graham would be in the FedEx Cup, but I mean, there's a potential of having a Canadian Open during the FedEx with no Canadians in it because
right.
It comes straight off the money list. So I think that even if they had it, you know, the week after or the week before the U.S. Open would be a key time to have it until, you know, they can negotiate that new schedule time date. I mean, I just don't see anything changing.
Your take on Graham's weekend, it felt like he was there for the most part, and when he missed that birdie Saturday on 18 and eventually turns it into a bogey, it felt like that was kind of his moment to stay in touch with the leaders.
It was. I mean, and, you know, he played extremely well. I mean, you know, I've been in that position before where I've been in third place going into the weekend, you know, of the Canadian Open. And, you know, it may be, you know, a second-tier event on the PGA Tour, but as far as a Canadian, I think the pressure that's on you to perform well in your own country, you know, of course, there's the long-standing drought of a Canadian winning the Canadian Open as well that's on your mind. So there's a lot of extra pressures, and you get pulled in a million different directions. And so I think that, you know, other than that, I think it bodes pretty nicely for Graham to, you know, heading into the FedEx Cup, heading into, you know, hopefully making a cut at a major. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, Valhalla is right into his wheelhouse. So I think that, you know, all in all, I think it was a pretty good week for the Canadians.
And, yeah, Brad Fritsch with the finish yesterday, right, just got his tour card within the last 12 months and did great on the web.com tour. He'd have to be pleased. Shot a 64 yesterday just to squeeze into the top 10. Maybe he wasn't feeling that pressure as much because expectations were lower than they would have been for Graham Dillette or David Hearn.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he started to show some signs of playing really well, you know, prior to that at the John Deere a couple weeks ago. So he has been struggling with his game, but he, you know, he needs to play well. He doesn't have very many weeks left to actually get himself into the top 125. So it was a good finish for him for sure.
Jim Furyk, did he lose this one or did Tim Clark just go out and get it?
he lost it. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, when you shoot 17 under par, even par is not par for these guys. You know,
right.
3 or 4 under is par. So when you go and shoot even par, the way that he played those first three rounds, he just absolutely, you know, tore the place apart. He gave that golf tournament away. I mean, Tim Clark, you know, shooting 30 on the back nine is pretty impressive. So, but I think there's something going on there. There's, you know, that's 7 times Furyk's had the lead going into Sunday and hasn't been able to close. So I think that he has still got something mentally going on in the back of his mind that has an issue with closing built around that U.S. Open at Olympic Club. I know that there were a couple times he had the lead going into the weekend prior to what happened at the U.S. Open, but, you know, now the Players' Championship this year. I mean, you throw those wins over the last 3 years at a guy who's 44 years old. I mean, that is unbelievable. I mean, he wins the Canadian Open. He's got the Players' Championship on his resume. He's got another major. I mean, that's a Hall of Fame career. Now that he's had trouble closing on Sunday, you know, he's just another player that's had a pretty nice career.
So Valhalla creeps up pretty quickly. Next week, as a matter of fact, to dive right in. Last major of the year, and all eyes, I would assume, Ian, on Rory McIlroy. Phil Mickelson hasn't had a top five finish in a major, and he hasn't done that since 2007. He usually jumps up and is relevant in one. He hasn't been yet. What are your expectations next week?
I think that, you know, you got to – one of the – you know, people – I don't know what it is about this tournament, but, I mean, it for such a new golf course, it's got some pretty interesting history. I mean, you think of one of the most controversial golf tournaments that maybe has ever been played. It was played at Valhalla when Tiger Woods beat Bob May. And the guy slapping the ball, did he hit the ball back into play and that type of stuff. So I think that, you know, I'm interested more than anything to see how Tiger Woods plays, because it's a fairly wide golf course. And it suits right into the wheelhouse of a launcher. So I think that guys like Rory and Bubba Watson, and, you know, if Tiger Woods is feeling well, if he's kind of getting past the point, you know what, I can actually play this game and it's not going to hurt anymore. I think he's had a good couple of weeks of practice. Let's just see how he does. But I think it's going to be a very, very interesting major, because it's just not your typical kind of golf course. I mean, Valhalla, I don't know how they've backed into this, you know, sort of prestige of being a major venue, but it just seems kind of odd to me. They've hosted a Ryder Cup, I think it's going to be one of the most intriguing majors of the year.
Good stuff. Thanks, Ian. We'll talk to you very soon.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that is Ian Leggett, Sportsnet golf analyst. Just does terrific work, and you saw him yesterday on Global's coverage as well of the RBC Canadian Open, which, I mean, maybe I'm an idiot, I don't know, but I was really confused yesterday. I was following along on my app and then watching the Blue Jays game and flipping over, and I was very confused, but I didn't realize that CBS was tape delaying everything. I didn't know what was happening.
It started like at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and they pushed it back about an hour or so it was tape delayed? Or it couldn't have been more than an
hour.
Yeah,
basically. Put it this way. I'm watching, fully intrigued, and then I check Twitter and find out that Tim Clark has won.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what was going
on. A lot of people
on.
Think it's a bad look to take the simulcast of the U.S. It's our national championship.
Yes.
But someone has to then step up and say, we'll spend the money, we'll put all the separate infrastructure out there, and we'll hire all our own announcers. It's a lot of work.
6:52, let's do best and worst.
Best. Tom Brady.
And worst.
Greg Brady.
Not really. With Brady and Walker.
It is true. You can't argue it. Tom Brady's the best, and you are the worst.
Tom Brady came back last week and worked harder than I did last week. I'll tell you that.
It is Brady and Walker, best and worst. Our chance to look back at the weekend in sports. Best win, worst loss, best player, worst player. Best win. What did you see?
Best win. The LA Angels are, they look for real. Still second best record in Major League Baseball. 2 games behind the Oakland Athletics. And they lost the first game at home against the mighty, mighty Detroit Tigers, but won the last 3 and gave up 2 runs for the Tigers over the next 3 games. David Freese, an eighth inning home run yesterday. Is it clearly obvious that they are going to be... No one wants that wild card to have to go out and play the Angels, but obviously teams will take it. The Jays would take it. The Royals would take it. The Indians would take it.
Of course, yeah. I think the bigger worry is for the Angels, because you are a legit team.
Yeah.
You have a great rotation, a great lineup, and Mike Trout, and yada, yada. We can talk all day. the LA Angels pretty much know that they can have a fantastic year. And for them, it's going to come down to one game. If you're any one of these other teams, Kansas City or Seattle, right? I think it's almost house money because you get into a one game type of play-in with the Angels.
And then your reward is getting Oakland.
Yeah, I know.
Instead of getting a Detroit, a Baltimore, a Toronto, who right now you look better than.
Worst loss, I'm going to give it to the Kansas City Royals. So we think of the Yankees, we think of the Mariners, we think of the Blue Jays, and then the Orioles when, you know, you're looking at these wild card positions. Well, Kansas City and Cleveland are kind of scrapping it out right now to see who's going to be that secondary team. Kansas City takes it on the chin yesterday, head-to-head. They lose at home 10-3 to the Indians.
Worst player, Pablo Sandoval, went 0-for-7 in the last two games of the Dodgers-Giants series. That's got some relevance. L.A. Bested Jake Peavy in his first Giants start, and the Dodgers stay. They swept the series, and they go a game and a half up on San Francisco. It's a great race, but Pablo Sandoval had a bad weekend.
Best player, I'm going to give it to Ryan Howard. We haven't said that in a while. Hits a two-run shot in the first inning. His first home run at home since June. You want Ryan Howard? You can have him for free right now. And nobody wants him.
Well, you have to pay him. So it's not for free, but you're right. Tough to, you know, he didn't sign himself to this massive contract. He's been a total pro about it. There's going to be some home run milestones potentially for him. He's at 327 right now.
Blue Jays ticket window coming up at 7:14. We will send you to the Blue Jays next week. Also, your Monday morning six-pack ahead.